So today we're going to speak about the Stoics. Everybody received the material?
Yeah.
And has everybody had a chance to review it?
Yeah.
And this is something we spoke about in September. Do you recall? We had a session on the Enchiridion briefly before.
Yeah.
So the question may arise, why are we returning to the Enchiridion? And we're going to get to that shortly. Before we get to that, I want to send you a link. There's a book that's being published by Pariyatti, which is the organization which works with Dhamma.org. It just went to everybody called, you can see the link, Pariyatti.org, A Lifetime Doing Nothing. The author is going to have a live book launch via Zoom exactly after our discussion. So if you're interested, it will be, I think it'll be very interesting to register and listen to him.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yes.
Living a lifetime doing nothing. And that is exactly what we're going to talk about in terms of Stoicism. So the question that we're going to talk about today a little bit is, why are we returning to the Enchiridion? Well, first of all, because we didn't cover it in depth last time. And this time we're going to do several sessions on Stoicism. But what is it that Stoicism offers to us? After your reading, what hit you first when you read the Enchiridion, the three chapters? What struck you? I'm interested in your impressions. What was the first thing that struck you about the writing and the reading? Anybody?
I like it because it's direct, and I like the simplicity. I do. And just straight to the point.
Simple and direct and straight to the point. Okay, that's good. That's a very good beginning. Anybody else?
Yeah.
The question is, what was your impression when you first read the Enchiridion? Or this is the second time that you read the Enchiridion. What hit you? What struck you about the way it was written? And Quinn just said she liked the simplicity. Okay?
It's, very rational and basically no bullshit. I mean, if you compare it to Buddhist teachings, it's not comfortable or sweet at any moment. It's just you do this and
direct.
That's the way to go.
Okay, let's go on. Any other impressions? What else struck you about it? Get what other impressions?
Oh, and I read it a while back because you had mentioned this to us in a discourse some months ago.
Right, in September. Yeah,
and I actually bought the book. And because I was moving this weekend, I didn't have a chance to do any reading. But what I recall, my immediate reaction when I did read it months ago, it felt current.
And so?
It felt so current. It felt like it was like right in the moment. It didn't feel like it was from a philosopher from so long ago, you know?
From thousands of years ago?
Yeah. Huh?
Oh, I say it's from the reading from thousands of years ago.
Exactly. And it just felt like it was like right now. That's the one thing I remember that really struck me.
Okay. Good. Excellent.
It doesn't beat around the bush, does it?
Exactly. Ah. Exactly. It was so direct. It was so direct.
Yes. So what does that, everything that you've all offered, what does that make it? It makes it very...
Real?
Real is a word. I'm looking for another word, though.
Simple. It's simple.
I'm looking for another word.
Imperative.
Still another word.
Relevant, for sure.
Relevant. Okay. Still another word. Come on.
I just think that the way that it was written and just so in a logical step, we all can attain this if we just follow.
Okay, so what does that make it? How would we describe it as being very
relatable?
Relatable.
Practical.
Practical, exactly. Now, why am I trying to fish this out of you? Well, you know I'm a stickler for practicality and what you can use. It has to be practical. In the group Telegram channel, I sent a link to etymology.com.words. Did anybody follow that link?
No.
The one with the description, with the definition?
With the etymology of the word Enchiridion.
Yes,
what does enchiridion? Yeah.
I looked at it.
Okay, and what did you find? What does enchiridion? A manual. And a manual has to be practical.
Right.
So the Enchiridion is a summation of Epictetus's philosophies. The very fact that Epictetus, or in French it's Epictet, and in Latin I think it's also Epicteto, something so slightly different in Italian, the very fact that he would write the Enchiridion is already giving you a view to his perspective on what philosophy is and what its purpose is for. Correct? He's offering not just books about what he thinks, what he believes, he's offering you a manual to follow, a practical tool. This is, I'm emphasizing this because this is the essentiality of the questions that we need to ask ourselves and respond to. It's not just that it's a nice book. It's not just that it's an efficient, effective, and direct book. It's that it addresses a very real question. And what question is it that it addresses? Why have a manual? Why don't we just satisfy ourselves with reading teachings, whether it's Buddha Dharma or Stoicism or any other philosophy, and just enjoy the teachings, enjoy the discussion?
For reference?
For reference? How about for making the teachings real, being able to use them? What's the point if we can't use the teachings? In this book, it's very, very clear. Epictetus is distilling what he believes, what he has discovered, into a handbook, a manual, an Enchiridion. In fact, there was a version of it published about, my guess would be 20 years ago, when its popularity resurfaced, called The Manual for Living. It's a cute little version. And it's a nice translation. It's very modernistic, but it's a nice translation. He's offering something that should be used daily, referred to daily, referred to as a practice. And you may recall that we ended the last discourse last week with the emphasis, daily practice, daily practice. So one of the tools that was emphasized by Epictetus was diarying, writing. And this was taken up big time by one of his greatest disciples and also a philosopher, the Emperor Marcus Aurelius, who diaried, meaning he wrote in his diary every day. And this is an excellent tool we can use every day to remind us of how to be present. But why the emphasis on practical tools? Why do we need practical tools? What's the purpose?
To organize our thoughts.
To organize our thoughts.
Experiences.
Think in a bigger sense. We're
so
born.
Looking at the world, maybe?
Okay, looking at the world. That's approaching it, cinema. Excellent. We're born,
Understand the limitations of our view.
Understanding limitations. That's also possible, but that's getting very specific before we even get there.
Okay,
so we're born, right? We're all born, otherwise we wouldn't be here. And then we meet our life experiences, our life circumstances. And then when we're young, we don't think much, unless we're forced to think much, which some of us are, about what life is all about. And suddenly, for the first time, we're forced to think what life is all about. And what's the first thing that comes to our mind when we have these experiences?
Why am I going through this? Why am I here?
Bingo. Bingo. Perfect, Quinn. Why am I going through this? Why am I experiencing this? What is this supposed to, why is this happening to me, right? Why is this happening to me? Which suddenly requires us to ask ourselves, what am I? Who am I? What's my role in all of this? What is being alive? Does that make sense to everybody?
Yeah.
Is that clear? And quickly we arrive at the question, is there a greater purpose? Right? Has anybody not asked themselves of that question? Is there a bigger purpose to what's happening to me? How many times have we been in both difficult, unpleasant situations, but also very pleasant situations, and subtly our inner voice says, is there a greater purpose to all of this? And when we ask that question of ourselves, suddenly we have strength, right? A little bit more strength to deal with whatever we're dealing with. Have you all found yourselves in that situation one time or another? And so the question is there a purpose? And then comes the next question, can one live without a purpose? Does life become meaningless if we just live moment to moment without a goal? Can the goal be just living? And isn't that what oftentimes we interpret Buddha Dharma to tell us, be in the present and just live in the present, don't have the goal? And so for that reason, I like the title of the book that I put in the chat box, A Lifetime of Doing Nothing. And I'll repeat, he's going to have, if you go to that link, he's going to have a live book launch today at 10 Pacific time, which is 1 New York time, which you can sign into free. That's the Dhamma bookstore. So if you want to sign in and listen to him, I think it'll be very interesting right after we finish. It's exactly a half hour after we're done. But if we live moment to moment, and this is the big question that I'm asking, is it true that we're really doing nothing? That's a good question, isn't it?
Okay.
And what does doing nothing mean, as Masha just expressed? Sorry, I have to bring it in because of her microphone. Or you can type in the chat box if you wish. Is it really possible to live doing nothing?
So, yes, it's possible. A lot of people do nothing in their life.
Well, what does that mean then, Quinn, if they're doing nothing?
Sometimes I feel I'm doing nothing.
But are you doing nothing? Are you breathing?
Yes.
You're breathing, okay. Does the universe breathe? I mean, in the cosmic sense, of course not.
Yes.
So if we're breathing, are we not participating in the breathing of the universe?
Yes.
Okay. So if we start to feel we're doing nothing, are we judging ourselves?
We are.
Right. And Lauren, if we're judging ourselves, yeah, go ahead, Sam.
Lauren, but isn't staying in the moment, doing something, even just doing that alone?
That's a good question. That's exactly what I want to lead to. How easy is it for anybody to stay in the moment?
Not very easy.
Not for us, at least.
But I think a larger part of the population lives like that. No, you sit in a, look at farmers, look at people working, look at craftsmen. They're doing what they're supposed to do with no papancha around. And that's okay. Living without doing nothing to, well, it's basically acceptance of your human dimension.
Okay.
Which brings wisdom and a sense of general satisfaction, and has a moral value too.
Okay.
So wonderful. I'd love to be one of them.
Yeah.
So we're approaching very much an interesting trying to think of the right word to call it. One word that arises in my mind is dilemma, question, discussion. On the one hand, we understand that living ethically and having an ethical structure and making efforts to be in the moment is important. On the other hand, we realize, especially from a Buddha Dharma point of view, that the more we strive to do that, the more we're fulfilling a wish of something or some ego, right? So it's very easy to get in the wrong direction of where we're wanting to be healed by our meditation. I'm taking that out of last week's discourse because I just uploaded all of that. And that was Sam's question that we answered last time. If we sit down to do our sitting in order to be healed, in order to want to feel better, then somebody's directing that, isn't it? And if somebody is directing that, how much is that being in the moment, or how much is that being a victim of clinging to an idea of what we should be happening and what we hope to happen? And this is a central discussion point in Buddha Dharma discussions among several schools, particularly among the Tibetans and the Zen school, more than some of the others, but also in other schools, that how can we practice and not practice? How can we do something and do nothing at the same time? And doing nothing, I would presume and to say, is similar to, in the Taoist sense, they say wu, which means nothing, and wu wo means no person, and wu xing means no action. And so the Taoists often talk about no action, living in no action. Well, they don't mean absolutely nothing in the absolute sense, because we're breathing and we're acting, but they do mean being present in the moment without the clinging to any expectation of arriving at something. So that raises another whole Pandora's box we can open up. Is it possible to live in the moment without wanting to arrive at something and still live a virtuous and compassionate, caring, and productive life? Of course, the glacier under the surface of the water is, what do I mean by productive? Because that right there is a qualifier. So when we approach the Enchiridion today, what I want to encourage you to consider is, how can we approach this document, this book, this manual that Epictetus wrote, as an instruction of how to live an effective life? And by effective, we're defining that as being real and being present. Now, why am I using that definition? Anybody want to hazard a guess? The question arises for us all, I believe. What gives meaning to our lives? Because all of us have to answer that question if we're going to take the next breath, right? Without having some kind of answer to that question, we don't bother breathing. If there's absolutely no meaning to our lives, and I don't mean necessarily in an intellectual, mental point of view, but rather from an existential point of view, then our lives will just cease. Our cells will just give up and say, what's the point? The universe will say, this energy can be used more efficiently elsewhere, perhaps. So each one of us has to at some point address the question, what gives meaning to our lives? Does that sound reasonable? Yes? No?
Yep.
And once we do that, we start to enter into the questions of how do we answer that question? And that depends on our ability to be aware of what we are, who we are, and what's reality. Agreed? If we don't know what is reality, or if we don't, I don't want to use the word know, but rather if we don't have an idea within our minds of what reality is for us, each and every one of us, then how will we be able to answer what gives meaning to our lives?